That's tight as fuck. I would not expect him to watch the shit.
Danny watches it? Yeah. That makes sense to me for some reason.
I learned a lot about Coach Diddy that y'all wouldn't believe. Yeah.
I would believe it. Yeah. He'd be red-faced a lot.
Yeah.
Man.
Somebody's got to be. Man. Somebody's uncle, somebody's OG, you know.
Oh, man. There's so many funny stories from Denny.
Oops. Yeah, that was my JV coach, and then he dipped out to Holden or whatever that was.
Oh, where was that at? Where was he, your coach at?
Topeka.
Okay.
Yeah, my freshman year, he was still the JV coach up there. I want to say Nichols was a freshman coach.
I seen Nichols the other day getting a 30-pack.
That's my favorite. That's, you talking about a big one or the...
Colin Nichols' dad?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's tall, but there's a big one too, right? Oh,
yeah, Coach Nichols.
Yeah.
Coach Nichols is my guy, though, man. Straight shooter, boy.
Right, he was so dope.
He's just sitting there over it the whole time.
And Miss Nichols. I fucked with Miss Nichols, too.
She got fired for being drunk, I think.
Yeah, I know.
She for being drunk?
Drunk at a game, yeah. She was freaking out.
Every game. And she would be up there doing a little, she was part of the little table, the book, when I was there.
You can't get drunk off the clock?
Man, she would be. I'm talking about.
Yeah, she was plastered.
You smelling her.
Damn.
You
know,
Miss Nichols. You know, did you just kind of
watch yourself?
Man. She was in there lit.
Don't hide the truth from these children.
She would be one to keep it.
Your teacher is a drunk.
That's too funny.
Seems pretty common.
Eli, what's your handle on Instagram?
@the_starchild_
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. I just couldn't remember.
I had to take this off the fucking table.
You want me to pour mine in there?
Yeah, sure. Trying to give these ads. I'm trying to do these ads.
There you go.
Trying to get this Four Hands Brewing.
Straight water in here.
No, I'm going to say I'm drinking, but it's going to be like the Raw District.
Potion.
Yeah.
Secret stuff.
Trying to get cups, too.
It's a blend. Secret blend.
Yeah.
Cups with the logo on it.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be fire.
We can make those here if you want some.
I'll get a bunch of them.
We can do glass.
Oh, glass. Yeah, that makes more sense. Ooh, you can just wash them.
Yeah.
That'd
be
fresh. That would be tight. Yeah,
a big glass mug like this.
That's like a fish.
Yeah, exactly.
That's like, yeah. That's
really fire.
I'm with that one.
I'm like one of those wooden ones you get from the Red Fest.
Raw District mug.
Yeah, exactly.
How do you pronounce your name?
No, you're fine. Martinez. Yeah.
Martinez?
Martinez, yeah.
Martinez, okay.
That's what we pour the shit for.
I usually call you Peace God.
What's that?
I refer to you as Peace God.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, you and your cousin.
Peace
yeah.
God.
Ah, Peace God. Oh, that's funny. I love it.
You don't do that no more?
Oh, yeah, I mean, of course. Like, I mean, I still answer to it, you know. But it would just be you and Seuss that call me that. Which I appreciate. I appreciate because that's, you know, that means a lot, you know.
I say that shit so often in my regular life. Like, that's easy, peace, bro. God. Like, I just chant it out of nowhere.
That's a beautiful thing, yeah. Yeah, I still do, too. It's, you know, and for me, it's funny, too, because, like, when we were, when I used to perform that piece at Ebony Tusk shows, I mean, you know, I was very intentional. I mean, it really was about pulling specific people out of the crowd, making eye contact, connecting with them, letting them know, like, I see you, peace, God, you know.
Just two words.
Yeah, exactly. Just real simple, but just, you know, showing somebody that you recognize them and you validate them. It was, like, such an important piece of that, so.
Shit, we don't even need to do an intro. We asked the pronunciation, and there it is.
Yep.
We're going to jump straight into this shit.
Yes, please, yeah.
The first thing I wanted to ask you, bro, is how do you describe your music to people? Because it's obviously different, but it has some hip-hop elements to it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So for me, it's like, so I was born in 1983. So for me, it's really easy for me to just jump immediately into hardcore hip-hop, you know, and just talking about the lineage of, like, early Beastie Boys. We're talking about Run DMC, talking about Rage Against the Machine later on in the 90s, talking about, you know, different acts like that sort of kick the door open for that clash between, like, rock music and hip-hop. So for me, it's like, as much as I take from modern influences and recognize, you know, all these different waves of hip-hop and different hip-hop eras, I think for me that's just kind of where it begins and ends, because that was, like, my earliest introduction into these sonic elements, you know, these sounds, you know, like, if you listen to, you know, like, some early Beastie Boys records, I mean, it's like they're just as distorted as the records we make today. You know, Public Enemy is another great example. Just watching Fight the Power on MTV, seeing that video over and over and over again, like back in 89, you know?
That's dope.
It's is that, like, who you listen to, or is that just the influence in the music?
I would say it's more just the influence, but But those are definitely records that I still turn back into, you know, and spend time with. Absolutely. I mean, Beastie Boys is probably, like, one of my favorite groups of all time. You know, Run DMC, same thing. Public Enemy, definitely to a point. Rage is, like, one of my favorite bands of all time, too. So it's like, you know, and that music feels just very timeless. You know, there's something about a break beat and a thick bass line and, you know, just a really strong melody and, like, somebody just, like, spitting really raw over the top that will just never die. Like, that that sound will never die. So for me, it's like, yeah, it's a little bit of both. You know, it's like I enjoy those influences and I turn into them every time I need to be reminded of, like, you know, what my center is, you know.
Oh, for sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. And Ebony Tusk, that's... How many people were in that?
Just three of us. It's me and my bandmate, Daniel Smith, and then our bandmate, Nathan Giesecke. We call him Geese, so it's a family nickname. But, yeah, it's been the three of us. I started Ebony Tusk roughly in, like, 2009, 2010. They came on board pretty shortly thereafter, so that would have been, like, Daniel joined me as far back as 2011 as my DJ at the time, and then Geese came on as a hype man, like, not long after, I want to say, within that same year. And then I think we got to a point in 2013 where we just started having more open conversations with each other because we were performing old material that I made with some other producers prior to that. Mm-hmm. And in 2013, I think we made a very conscious decision, okay, so what do we actually want to sound like, the three of us? You know, what are we capable of making? So a lot of the music from our upcoming album, I mean, that's stuff that we spent, like, the last, you know, from, like, 2012 to 2019, refining and cultivating. We took a long time on it just because I think we just wanted it to be, an honest reflection of who we are, you know, and kind of grow into the material as well.
Yeah. Are you behind the production, too?
All three of us.
Okay.
All three of us produce, yeah. And so that was the funny thing is that when, early on when we started, I was just giving direction to the producers I was originally working with, and then... I started making some beats. Daniel's always made beats. And then Geese has actually released production, like, under his alias, Geesecke. So for us, I mean, the transition into collaborating on the music together was natural, but it just kind of took us a while to get where we wanted to go with it. So
I noticed that you performed a lot of stuff before you recorded it.
Yeah.
'Cause, like, but that, I've always thought that I probably should have done that because it makes the recording a lot better. Did you notice that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the big thing for us too at that point in time was also in 2013, like, when we decided, like, we want to write material that's original to the three of us, it was also like we want to make our live show as good as it can be. So I think for us, I mean, we were kind of on a three-year mission at that point from 2013 to 2016 to just becoming better performers and developing a natural chemistry with one another. There would be times, like specific shows, you know, where we would plan things out a little bit, have a set list, say this is how we're going to do it. But otherwise, we gave ourselves as much opportunity to stay loose on stage and to stay present and to, like, make eye contact with one another, like, have that silent communication. Like, that was really kind of the most important thing is, like, what can we do to you know, surprise ourselves every time we get up on stage and perform, you know, just always trying to challenge ourselves. And so then I think by 2016, I think is when we decided we were ready to start recording. You know, at that time we would have had like four finished songs.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
It's a good feeling. 'Cause I've been to many of your shows and then I didn't even notice that they weren't recorded.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, but that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that's the funny part, too. I think we also just, we didn't want to be, like, bound and confined to the idea of, like, we have to have this record before we show it to people.
A lot more freedom.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we were just doing everything that we could to give ourselves freedom. I mean, as you all know, it can be really confining to be a local artist or to be defined as a local artist. You know, I think all of us are ambitious as creators, you know, and as writers and as artists, you know, but sometimes the trouble with, everything that's in front of you, every platform or every template, sometimes it just boxes you in, you know. And so for us, I think it was just really important that people understood how good we could be live. Like, I felt like, you know, this is the one way that I know I can earn my keep if we just keep showing up and getting better and better live on stage. And for us, that was just another route, you know, just taking a different route instead of, you know, we got to spend the next 3 to 4 years recording before.
Because that, not to cut you off, but that seems like a hip-hop thing. And you've been in other bands, too. Like, you mm-hmm. have some punk stuff and alternative stuff.
Yeah.
So that makes more sense coming from that side of it.
Absolutely. And that's a good way to put it, you know, because so often, or at least like the bands I was in, you know, you might cut a little 4-track demo back in the late 90s or early 2000s, you know, and it doesn't sound good, but it's good enough to get your foot in the door. And if you mm-hmm. perform really well live, then you could ride out on that for a really long time, mm-hmm. you know. And so, yeah, no, that's a good point. And that's definitely where that thinking was coming from, is just, you know, we didn't want it to be completely polished. We didn't want it to be completely refined, but we wanted it to have merit on its own, you know.
Do you write the lyrics first, or do you...
It depends, you know. It depends. Some songs I've written the lyrics first. Other ones, more often now, the music comes first, and then I'll write the lyrics, you know. But, it's funny. For instance, like, I have a whole song that I wrote back in October called 12 that... I have this idea of a beat in my head, and I wrote to that,
mm-hmm.
wrote the whole song to that, you know, know exactly how I want to deliver it, but now I have to make the beat around it, you know?
Yeah, right.
So.
You speak out on the culture a lot, and you stand up for the Black culture. Do you find it challenging with the genre of music that you make to find a fan base, like, in today's time?
Oh, absolutely. That's a great question because, you know, again, another part of the challenge of, like, not having recorded material released, especially, like, in the mid-2010s, was that, it really was hard to find a fan base. And especially what we do, I mean, it's, you know, it's pretty unique for this area. But I would say, like, the blessing of that, too, is that, you know, it's not like for me, like, I just came into this music without, like, having any sort of precedent, like, my buddy Les is more. He was in a group with Conductor Williams called Heartfelt Anarchy.
Conductor.
Yeah, exactly. Shout out Conductor, doing his thing. But so I went to Texas. I went down to South by Southwest. I was playing in my old band, Cowboy Indian Bear, and we were all playing the same showcase. They were playing early on, like they were playing early in the day, so it would have been like 11 or 12 in the afternoon. Beautiful day, right? But it's funny because sometimes, like, I'll have ideas and I'll have projects in my head and think, like, okay, this is what I want to do, this is how I want to do it. And then I see somebody do it, and then I'm like, you know, like, like, I had this all planned, like, you know? And so for me, it was a breath of fresh air, but it was also, like, equally frustrating because it's like, that's exactly, like, that I wanted to hit that hard. I want the lyrics to be that present. Like, you know, I just want to evoke that similar feeling. So for me, like, honestly... Right before Ebony Test started performing out, Heartfelt Anarchy was easily like one of my biggest influences, and I mean even to this day, like Les and D are incredible artists. So, but yeah, so for me it was like in a way it was like, so that was like a peer that we could grow into, and then years later, you know, we started to see our influence bear out on some other artists. I don't know if y'all heard Young Machetes yet, but.
Yep.
Yeah, so, you know, same kind of thing. Like, I met Cody when he was at Washburn in one of his English classes, and I recited some poetry, and he thanked me, and then I saw, oh, you're wearing a Nine Inch Nails sweatshirt, and so we talked about that. And then, like, you know, within a year, Young Machetes was here, and I was like, wow, you know? And that's a good feeling, you know, sometimes, like... So back to your original question. It's funny because, like, I think I started to shift my mindset about what a fan base could be, especially once we realized that the music that we write and what we write it for, there's a bigger purpose to it. So for me, it really started to become a community, and like everybody, you know, who takes the time to come out to our shows or. Purchase our merchandise or help donate to a cause, like, you know, this is just a part of our larger community. I mean, a lot of times a fan base is just your family and friends, right? So you might, you may as well, so like if you're building a house, you may as well make your family and friends feel as welcome as you do, you know, in your expression and your talent, you know? So for me, I think that was like the biggest shift for us is like, we just want to make sure everybody knew how much we appreciated them and valued them and that it's, you know, it's so much bigger than all of us, so.
For sure. What do you take more pride in, being a musician or being like involved in the community and being like an activist of some sort?
You know, that's a really good question. That's tough. Because I think there's, I mean, I think that there's...
Barbara Walters in this motherfucker.
No, that's good. See, yeah. That's good. So you're getting me to think. That's a blessing. I like being asked challenging questions. I feel like there's ebbs and flows to both. And I feel like there was definitely a point in time in music making where I realized that the way I'm going about this is like not nourishing. It's not enriching. Like it's not really adding net value into my life, you know, just because of the way I was living around it. You know, it's like I spent, you know, there was one year where I played like 100 dates on the road with my old band, and it was like as exciting as that feels, it's also just like, you know, I'm neglecting relationships. Like I'm missing my nephews and nieces' birthday parties. Like I'm not checking in with my brothers and sisters. Like I'm not really talking to my parents at that point, you know.
That balancing act is so tough.
Yeah.
That's the shit I challenge. Like, it's a challenge, bro.
It really is. It really is, you know? And it's like, for me, it's like, you know, my wife and I, we've been together 13 years, and there was definitely a point where it's just like, you know, we would like to transition into what the rest of our life looks like, you know? Yeah. And you can't do that when you spend, like, half a year on the road, you know? So what I will say, though, is that now that I've gotten more involved in the community in ways that I feel like, you know, bring me joy and bring me pride, I can take all of that back into the music and feel even better about the music that I'm making, you know, take pride in that as well. So
I know you keep a message in a lot of things you do. Is there a message in Ebony Tusk? Like, what's that name mean?
Yeah, so it's interesting, you know, I mean, I think I just, it's just like a really simple flip on Ivory Tusk, you know. The fact that, like, Ebony Tusks, like, in the world as we know it, like, they're man-made, like, you know, they're synthetic. But it's also one of those things that, you know, when you see, like, an Ebony Tusk, like, a replica of an Ivory Tusk painted ebony or whatever, it's something that just, like, shifts your focus a little bit. It's just something that, like, throws you off balance a little bit. And I think that's really what the big message is in terms of the name as it relates to the music, is that we always intend to throw you off balance. Like we're trying to throw ourselves off balance. We're trying to challenge ourselves at the same time, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So, yeah.
And you talk about just the struggles of like balancing out being the artist and everything, being in relationships and stuff like that. What do you do to really figure it out? Like, what have you turned to?
Practice. Therapy. Mm-hmm. Honestly, yeah. I think it's tough because also a lot of why I started Ebony Tusks is because when I was growing up in the late 90s here in Central Topeka, I lost a lot of my friends prematurely, whether that's gun violence, police violence, suicide, freak accidents, you name it. I think I counted at least 11 funerals in my class alone, class of 2001, that we attended from when I started as a freshman to when I graduated, and that doesn't count the people I didn't go to school with, whose funerals I went to, you know. Shortly after we graduated, we lost, you know, a few more people. You know, one of my best friends, Taiwan Wiley, him and his older brothers made music, and I mean, that was a big part of, like, Stick and I growing up was spending time with the Wileys, and they had a little record label, I think it was called, like, Royalty Records.
Is that who Holding Back Tears is about, from Stick?
You know what? You might have to ask him. I'm pretty sure it is, because he's written a few songs about Taiwan.
That song is great.
Good. Yeah, song. That's an amazing song.
I think
song.
He name dropped him in it, I think. I'm pretty sure.
That's what made me ask that. I know there's some type of connection, but that song or another song, but
Yeah, he's got a few. I wouldn't be surprised if Holding Back Tears was about Taiwan, but so I think for me it's like, I think what's kept me going in it all these years, especially over the last 10 years doing Ebony, is like, you know, for Taiwan, for my friend Richard, who committed suicide, for my friend Stuart, who was a friend of Richard's, who also committed suicide. They were also very creative, you know, brilliant individuals, all very different. You know, we all grew up in some ways, like in Central Topeka, but all just kind of lived very different lives. But all three of them were just very brilliant people, and had a lot of struggles, you know, went through a lot of trauma, and so for me, it's like, you know, anytime I have self-doubt or, you know, experience traumas of my own, I just remember that, you know, a big part of why I'm doing this is for them, and, you know, for all the dreams that, you know, I remember the last time I saw Richard actually was at a hip-hop show at the Granada. I was there with, like, a bunch of my OGs, like, you know, we were all just there hanging out, watching the show, and I remember Richard in particular, he was just really down, so I went to him, and I said, you know, hey, like, you know, I would love to hang out with you soon, you know, I'd love to get together, you know, you seem kind of down, what's going on, and he didn't really say anything. That was a Wednesday, and then I got the call on Sunday, so then I tried to jump in my car. I had a 1983 Dodge Aries. I don't know if you're familiar with K cars, but they used to be popular in the 80s. They're just really trash cars. So.
What are they?
K cars. Yeah, so like Plymouth made one, Dodge made one. Like it's American made, but anyway. So, I jumped in the car. I couldn't get it to go. Like, you know, I'm pounding the steering wheel, crying. Like my dad like comes out and brings me back in the house. You know, like Richard was one of my best friends at the time. You know, and a person who also challenged me as well. That's what I would say about all three of them. What they had in common is that they always challenged, like, my beliefs, and they challenged the way I thought about the world and the way that I looked at the world. They forced me to look at it in a different way, and I really, you know, I carry that with me, but I also miss that. Like, I wish, you know, I wish I could go back and get that 19 years back, yeah. You know?
That's a prime example of energy living forever, and I always talk about your energy and just the way you make people feel. Like, it affects even long after your death. Like, you know, it's really important.
Through other people, too.
Yeah.
Because we're all together and it's all affecting it at one time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a great point.
Yeah. And you said therapy. Do you really go to therapy? Or is it?
Yes. Yeah. I have a wonderful therapist. Her name is Elisa Hilliard. We're not related. But.
Oh, for real?
She's based in Lawrence and... I found her through the Stormont Vail system. Actually, I was diagnosed with diabetes type 2 like back in February of 2018. So I was already having like a lot of physical health issues at the time. But I was also living with some trauma that I hadn't adequately dealt with at that point in time. Back in 2009 when I was living in Lawrence, and this was another big reason why I started Ebony Tusks, is August of 2009, my former roommate, she had just moved out of the apartment that we were staying in. And so then it was like a Friday night. I took a nap, like, which I normally never do after work on a Friday, because like on a Friday you're going to go out, you know. So but then I wake up at like 9:30, 9:45, real quiet, you know, because people had just moved in, everybody's getting settled in, right? So my apartment door gets kicked in, I got a gun in my face, somebody's beating me up. You know, looking for drugs and money, and, you know, which, unbeknownst to me, a third person who was living in our house who I didn't have any communication with was, like, dealing drugs out of our apartment, you know. And I didn't like him. I mean, like me and him, like, we did not get along, you know. I didn't want him there, so. One of the defendants ended up going to jail for 7 years, and then the other one did, like, 3, and got out in, like, 2.5. As a first-time offender. But that just really, that shifted my perception about a lot of things, unfortunately, you know, just developed a lot of paranoia, depression. It really messed up, like, the time that, you know, I spent in Lawrence, like, from 2007 to 2012. Like, I felt very, like, rudderless at that point in time. Like, I didn't have, like, any really strong direction outside of, you know, making music and wanting to maintain my relationship with my now wife and stuff. I just was very, like, just working and going home, getting drunk, like, just trying to fix it myself, you know.
Yeah.
So honestly, you know, getting a therapist back in 2018 was great. You know, I had one, and then she moved on to Kansas City. Then I connected with Elisa, and, you know, the 4 or 5 sessions that we've had, like, in the last year and a half have actually been, like, really incredible. So, yeah.
Definitely, yeah. I advocate for it, for sure, but I'm not too sure on how, like, the whole process is. Like, how do you even go about getting a therapist? Like,
well, you know, I was really lucky because, like, when I was diagnosed with diabetes, my family doctor and my nurse practitioner, they both explained to me, you know, like, do you feel like anxiety, depression, like any of these other symptoms? And I was like, yeah, you know, like I generally feel depressed and whatnot. So then I got a prescription for Prozac, which didn't agree with me and a lot of people have trouble with. So I switched to Lexapro and that's what I take now. But throughout that whole thing, you know, I was explaining to them like kind of what I was feeling, what was happening mentally and emotionally. And they said, well, you know, we do offer therapist services as well. So just really lucky. I just, you know, had good insurance and was able to go to my doctor and talk to them about it and find a path to therapy, you know, because otherwise it is kind of difficult.
Yeah, I dealt with my little stint. Like, of course, you always deal with depression on different types of levels and whatnot. But there was a good 2 years where I was just like, just out of it, not making music, just drinking my life away.
Right.
And the one thing that pulled me out, because it was meditation and exercise. And that's what I advocate for so many people. Just first and foremost, try that and then take the next steps if, you know.
Absolutely.
Because there's limitations. Like you said, you were diagnosed with diabetes. And that made me think to like, all right, I'm telling people just to exercise like it's easy for everybody.
Right,
and
sure.
And it kind of made me, that just kind of made me like, step back on my thinking about that a little bit. But.
But no, that's fair, though. I mean, and that's something that, you know, even my family doctor has explained to me, you know, and it's something that I've seen good results from, too, is, like, just drinking a ton of water.
Yeah, that's
stretching,
too.
You know, exercising a little bit, you know, even if it's, like, 15 or 30 minutes a day. I mean, there is something to be said for how it lifts your spirit. So,
yoga and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Water
yeah.
is key. During that little stint, I got kidney stones, and
oh no!
It was I got a kidney stone, and it was too fucking big to pass.
Right.
So I had like the fucking
cut your wiener open.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, it
start
wouldn't
over.
Even pass.
Start
it,
again.
It wouldn't even pass through my kidneys. So oh, I had to shit. Get on this. They put me to sleep, and they had to zap it somehow.
Surgery.
Yeah, zap it, and then I still had to pass them like fucking
all those little bits and pieces.
Yeah, hundreds of them, man. That shit was crazy. I drink a crazy amount of water now.
Like you have to. Yeah. You have to.
It's important. And it makes you think better too. Like, honestly, like when I started drinking water.
Hydrate or dehydrate.
Yeah, for real. It's crazy how important. It's like gas. It's fuel for humans. Like,
absolutely.
Slept on.
And you can feel it too. It's like when you drink a tall, cold glass of water. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, drinking water.
Everybody's drinking water right now.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's like you can tell. It's like
balance it though.
Your body just has such a positive reaction when you feed it with fuel that nourishes it. You know, so whether that's water,
even like a multivitamin.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh yeah, like I take 11 pills every day. So you know, and with that said, I mean, only 4 of them prescription, and the rest are like, you know, a vitamin of some sort. So, but I also take insulin as well. So it's one of those things where, you know, if I'm not careful, like with my dad, like he started out type 2, just taking pills, it developed to type 1. I recently found out my mother was a diabetic, and I didn't know that, because she beat it. Like, she lost the weight, so she doesn't have to take any medication, which is amazing. It's a blessing, but, like, everybody on my dad's side is diabetic, you know, a lot of my uncles and aunts and stuff. And so that's just hard. It's just hard to... Like, that was a hard journey to embark on, but it was one that I knew I needed to, just because, like, my body had been reacting so poorly to my lifestyle for a very long time. Like I didn't remember what it felt like to have feeling in my left foot until, like, I got on medication. And I'm talking about years, you know, like, where, like, my foot is just tingling all day, every day. It's getting worse.
How'd you have to change your, like, your diet?
Well, that's the thing is, like, so the medication, like, the insulin helps out a lot. And then I also take metformin, but they definitely encourage you, like, to take in less sugar, less
sugar.
Processed sugars, you know.
Sure.
And so there's, you know, there's times where I have lapses, like, you know, I had, like, an ice cream sundae today, and it was really good, so. But a lot of times, you know, like, in the morning, like, I'll eat a really protein and grain-heavy breakfast, like, I'll eat oats and smoothies and just, like, scrambled eggs. You know, and I try to be consistent about that. So just, like, have the same breakfast every day, you know, get through to a late lunch and then have a healthy dinner like we always cook at home anymore. So.
For sure. Yeah. To turn a corner, how do you feel about the presidential race right now?
I don't feel anything about it, to be completely honest with you. I'm so
discouraged. Elaborate on that.
Yeah. So I'll tell you, when Obama was elected in 2008, even then, I was cautiously optimistic. Like, I remember being in downtown Lawrence and, like, running back out west to Conroy's Pub and then going back downtown. And it was one of those things where, like, you know, I recognize, like, the historical significance of this moment, and I can appreciate that. But a couple of people that I was following pretty closely at the time, not as much now, Dr. Cornel West and Tavis Smiley, were both doing some really important work regarding poverty in America. So they were doing what was called a poverty tour. And they had a lot of other, like, their black counterparts, like, in the circles that they ran in, academia and mass media, that were saying, like, you know, this is the first black president, we need to give him a chance, da-da-da-da-da. But their whole thing was, like, you know, we need to hold his feet to the fire more, because this is somebody who might understand more clearly, you know, what's happening, like, all the, you know, socioeconomic disparities between minorities and white folks, or socioeconomic disparities in largely white communities between a poor part of town or a rich part of town, you know. So they were actively going out to these poor communities, not even necessarily rural, you know, some big cities, some smaller cities like Topeka size, and having conversations with people on the ground, like, so how are you living? Like, what does poverty look like to you? And I felt like that was really important work that was being done that pretty much every administration is, like, ignored in some way, mm-hmm. you know, because for a lot of people, it's either, you know, it's either an idea of, like, you know, everybody just wants welfare and they just want to take advantage of the system, or, you know, like they're middle class and, you know, they're gainfully employed and they're healthy. And it's like, you know, as long as nothing bad happens, like, they can survive, you know. And I feel like that's just the general tone that you get from the top down, which is why a lot of Americans fail to reconcile themselves with somebody else's living conditions. You know, a lot of people don't even want to look at it, blame it on you, mm-hmm. rather than looking at a system, or rather than looking at how the federal government or a state government or a local government bears influence on, you know, the conditions of how people live, you know?
For sure, yeah.
So
you think it's more of, like, you say you don't really feel nothing about the presidential race, so you just,
right.
you're real strong about the community, and just from the bottom up.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. And I made that decision a long time ago. I mean, a big part of it, too, is that I previously worked for the city of Topeka right before I moved to Lawrence. In December of 2005 to August of 2007, I worked in the city attorney's office. This is at a time when we had just appointed our first city manager, Norton Bonaparte. So it was the first time we moved into that strong city manager, weak mayor model. And it was just an interesting time. I mean, for me, it's like working in the attorney's office meant I'm going to the Topeka Police Department every day. So I did that every day for 18 months, every work day, go to the police department. And not to say that I was privy to a lot of, like, specific information, but you can imagine the atmosphere. Mm-hmm, you know, yeah. I'm walking in looking like this right. back in 2006, you know? Mm-hmm. And you can imagine just some of the tone that people use with you and some of the interactions that you end up having. I was going to county every day, too. I was going to the courthouse every day. So I think for me, that just, you know, that starved any sort of, like, political ambition out of me really quickly, like, once mm-hmm. I realized, like, there's a lot here that I'm seeing that I don't like. Right. One interesting coincidence is that after City Manager Bonaparte left the city of Topeka, he then went on to become city manager in Sanford, Florida. And that was where Trayvon Martin was killed. So within a year of him becoming city manager back in Florida, and I'm thinking, like, he's probably thinking, like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm going to kick back, retire here, you know, mm-hmm. Finish raising my kids here. It's like, it's going to be chill. Yeah. And then within a year, I swear, you know, and that's how life is, you know, and that's how America is. Like, that's really where we are as a country, you know. It's like, you keep ignoring these things, like, it'll just come back, smack you in the face, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
So.
Chris, you alive over there? You got the question of the day.
Yes.
Don't ask me no dumb shit.
I think you I think you had one on there you like. There's a couple on there, I'm sure.
Yeah, we should talk about, yeah, we should do a couple. Yeah, for sure.
Let's see what people are talking about.
And it bet not be no dumb shit.
Yeah. I'm going to edit that nice. That's going to be the drop.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, oh, my yeah. God. Yeah, that's a great drop.
You might as well just jump in with the initial one. Shout out my man Ricky Bratton.
Oh, yeah, we of course. Yeah.
Shout out.
Oh, yeah.
He said, do you think there's a hidden agenda behind the COVID-19 scare?
That's a great question. You know, and it's funny because I've seen Ricky talk about this on Facebook a few times. Mm-hmm. And for those that don't know, Ricky and I grew up together because he grew up a block over off of Boswell, I believe.
Shout out Boswell.
Yeah, exactly.
Lived on Boswell.
Yep, exactly.
Shout out Boswell. So, come on the show.
Come on the show, Boswell.
Come sit down.
All
come
of Boswell.
Yeah. Come through. So I grew up knowing his mother and his sister Shay, and like Shay and I used to work together at Little Caesars and all that. But I know that there's definitely an agenda. I don't know if it's hidden. I'll say it to you like that, Ricky. Honestly, it's one of those things where I know that, especially like in the history of the Black community in America, like if we're just purely talking about diseases and vaccines, you know, that I know that. You know, there's all this documented history of the mistreatment and abuse of Black bodies with regard to modern medicine, you know?
Mm-hmm. And, like, being, like, guinea pigs and the
exactly. way they, yep.
like, vaccines and stuff. I've seen them talking about that, too.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, like, for anybody who feels particularly strongly about not getting vaccinated, especially as a Black person or a person of color, like, I completely, like, understand that. I grew up in the military. My dad was in the Army for almost 20 years. I was actually born overseas in Germany. And so the thing about traveling internationally, having to go back and forth, you know, we went back and forth a couple of times. You're not really in a place like where you have an option one way or the other, you know. But with that said, historically, for me personally, I've not had a bad experience with vaccines. I've chosen to vaccinate my daughter, you know, and these are things that, you know, I recognize, you know, as personal choices, you know, and that all specifically goes back into my experience that for me, it's like this, you know, helped prevent me from getting sicker in a lot of cases, you know, especially as a person now that like I'm being high risk for COVID-19, being a diabetic and stuff. So for me, it's like because I've spent so much time with modern medicine and with doctors throughout my life and had all of these positive experiences, you know, clearly like that's influencing the decisions that I'm making now for my family. But yeah, as far as like a much larger agenda, yeah, sure. Absolutely. I mean, and like I said, I don't know how hidden that is. Like, I don't think that, unfortunately, the Trump administration has done any of us any favors in terms of, you know, providing us, you know, with a thorough examination of how bad this could truly get. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, you know, it all just seems like it's just happening now. Yeah. You know, and I think that's
sad. Keep track as it goes.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's sadder than anything because people are dying while that's happening.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I'll tell you one thing. Go on Google.
Is this search what you told me?
Any three-digit number. And then
I'll do it right now.
So like
785
and then new cases. New cases. There will be that article right.
Don't you put it in like a city? Like plug a certain city?
Just do 785 new cases.
Kentucky 785 new cases.
Mm-hmm.
And
so I mean, I'm sure that's not an agenda, but you know.
I think and this is a brilliant idiot type take.
It's just something
the way society is like the way we were headed, think about virtual reality. You think about us all communicating through cell phones. You think about, remember like 10 years ago, you wish like, hey, I wish McDonald's would deliver. They do now.
They do now.
Yeah, you got robots. There's robot janitors at Walmart. I don't know if you've seen those. There are.
There's pull up on you with a broom.
The corner store.
Get out of the way.
my corner store guy's a Bitcoin machine.
What?
My thing is like, is it in America's best benefit and in the business world's best benefit for us to push towards this type of living?
Oh, yeah, sure, yeah.
And
yeah.
That's when he said hidden agenda. I was like, oh, that's exactly what I've been thinking this whole time. Because, like, even down to autonomous. Even to being, like, a cashless society, which would be crazy. Like, I don't agree with it, but, like, there's coin shortages now.
Yeah, sure.
And they're pushing towards, like, everything
being. Yeah, that was fake, too, but I don't, I'm a dummy.
Well, see, and that, well, that's a, yeah, and I, and yeah, and I don't know much about money, but, mm-hmm. but I will say that whenever the Federal Reserve needs to make more, we can make more. I mean, as evidenced by like COVID-19, is like we just made like another $10 trillion. You know, like went $10 trillion further into debt as a nation.
It gets to my conspiracy. I don't like really talking about getting real conspiratorial, or I don't know if that's a fucking word.
No, you got it. Yeah, that's it. See, we got a bunch of wordsmiths yes, here.
Yes. But like Amazon, that's another one that creeps me out. Like Bezos, he's about to be fucking stupid fucking rich.
Yeah.
Like, it starts to get you a little, it starts to get me, like, moving a little bit on the conspiracy type shit. I heard
some conspiracy shit about Bill Gates, like, being a part of the vaccine, and it's, like, a part of a new another agenda, like.
Yeah. I heard that one, too, but it was just, like, that was kind of, yeah, that was, yeah.
I think that's hurtful.
Get on YouTube, yeah, bro. Exactly. It's true.
That's what I'm saying. Like, Bill,
I mean, I'm not super.
I'm just kidding.
You know, I don't use words like sheeple, but I think
it's Bill and his wife, they put a lot of money in to try to find any solutions. You know, I'm not caping for them right
there
now.
Are
I'm
some
just saying.
Studies about kids in India who like paralyzed because of some of the vaccination testing.
Absolutely.
Wow. Dang.
See, and that's the thing. They choose people. They choose people that they think it aren't like worth the life to live or something.
Right. Well, and he and what's tough is like the next step is that Trump could issue an emergency order to force a vaccine through the CDC by November 1st, which really sounds disastrous based
why
on
would
like
you force it?
Like based on every other metric that we have about the way that vaccines are developed, tested, and approved previously.
Forced like we have to get it.
Yeah, like a vaccine would have to be produced by like November 1st.
Oh, okay.
Even if it's not 100%.
But you still have the option to take it or not? Or
they haven't talked about it that far. They just, I think that was the article that I read. I skimmed it. I'm sorry. but just that, that's an option on the table is that, you know, like a sitting president could write an emergency order and force one out there, which, you know, I mean, that seems like a bad idea. It seems really bad.
It's irresponsible.
Yeah, it seems really
y'all
irresponsible.
Y'all get the flu shot? I know you said you ain't had no bad experience with vaccines.
Yeah, so I get a flu shot every year, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've never gotten it.
In a while. Since it was, like, mandatory as elementary.
It's even on the couch. You get the flu shot? You know
that was that kind of rolls into the next question. Somebody on
I've never got
asked.
I've never got the flu either. Yeah.
Somebody did ask, would y'all take the vaccine if there was one approved?
If Trump does what y'all were just talking about, hell
no.
I'm
about to say no. Yeah, I'm not taking
not
that
right
one.
Away,
no. I'm not taking the Thanksgiving one. No.
I'm gonna have to see some people go through it.
I've been privileged enough to be healthy enough to not worry about that.
Yeah,
so.
Sure.
That was my answer. I was like, I'm young enough. I feel like I'm healthy enough that I'm not at risk like that. But if circumstances were different, if I was at risk, you know, if there was some different underlying health, you know, issues there, then obviously, yeah.
But I wouldn't listen to Trump about
the best
it.
Chance.
Like, I would listen to
doctors. Not, obviously not under some circumstances of, like, the world's going to be guinea pigs. Let's just force this out.
Like, if Dr. Fauci was, like, pulling up to Topeka and was like, hey, come get this vaccine. It's like, yeah, dog, yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely,
right,
you know.
Yeah, even he was getting some backlash from the White House.
Absolutely. And that's what's tough. Is because,
that the agenda?
Well, that's what's tough is because he has a history of having led America through all these different infections crises, like through AIDS and through Ebola. Like he was always a part of all of those conversations and discussions, you know. So it's just tough when somebody has that level of experience with other life-threatening diseases that, you know, they handcuff him before he can really, like, you know, as he's also giving out people like just everyday information, like forget the vaccine for a minute, like,
hey,
just the fact that we got to argue about wearing a mask or not. When we see all these other countries all over the world who have,
right,
you know, a precedent, you know, especially in Asian countries, China, Japan, Korea, you know, and all these major, like China has like 20 cities that are like 10 million people or more, right? Like
yeah. it's a billion, I just recently learned that.
There's a billion people, yeah. in that country, in that one country.
It's wild.
You know, like India's got another billion, right? Mm. So if you're talking about like 2 billion people like throughout, you know, North Asia, Eurasia, Southeast Asia, like all these people and millions of people spread out in all these cities. And you can keep all these people alive just by wearing a mask, you know. Mm. Like I don't know the numbers in China. All I'm saying is, like, if it's something that works, then just let it work. Just let it work.
And are the numbers in China, like, what's the deal with that? What do y'all think? Because I'll be looking at this.
They weren't producing them or something.
Oh, that they
is
weren't.
Is that one point there? Is that zero?
How it's like like today was 11 cases.
Right,
but to be real,
and
though,
it started there first, so they might be on the, you know.
The way this,
I see what you're asking.
Yeah, but the way this like disease works or whatnot, they clocked out at like 80 something thousand cases.
Yeah.
They live on top of each other, like
right.
How in the fuck if it spreads this fast and it comes to America and we are spread out some, you know, there's Kansas numbers are going crazy and we don't even fucking see people sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can go a day without seeing somebody. And it just creeps me out that it just stopped that. Like, it stopped there.
No, that's really interesting, yeah. And you know, without getting too much into, like, you know, like, global politics, I mean, like, yeah. I'm certainly not qualified enough to know exactly how...
More than us.
I just read what I read back in January and February, you know. I just remember having a bad cold in February and thinking, like, oh, my God, this is the worst cold I've ever had, you know. So, like, when people were talking about that, you know, that was something that resonated with me because I remember from mid-February to early March, like, having bad coughing fits and trouble breathing, you know. So, it's like you never know, you know, because I went to the doctor on the back end, you know, so by the time my symptoms had all dampened down and, you know, they gave me prescriptions for something else, you know.
I'm no expert or anything, but when I look at the numbers and how fast this shit spreads.
I know what you're saying.
I go on the limb to say, like, everybody's probably got it or most people have got it, but passed through them in some way, shape, or form. It just,
yeah,
it moves so quick. It's crazy.
Everybody's immune system's a little different, reacts to it a little different.
It's going to be interesting to see the long-term effects of what, you know, because you may get over the cold, you may get over the, oh, I can smell again, blah, 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 but next year.
I think it was long-term.
Yeah, next year your chest starts tightening up.
There's going to be them commercials late night.
Or if it's a seasonal thing. Say it's a seasonal thing and you get it in 2020 and then it weakens your immune system and it comes back 2021. Now it's not just a loss of sense or smell or whatever. Now you got
it's worse for you.
And then it just keeps going and like. If that happens, it can lower our lifespan.
Better get that vaccine when it comes out.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I'm going to need to watch some people get it. I need to watch,
watch a couple people.
Let's roll off. This is the last question. This is kind of off topic, just to kind of.
Yeah, no, thank y'all for the questions. Appreciate that.
Yeah, for sure.
No doubt. This is a shout out to my dude. Actually, the last one was from my boy Jeff. Jeff. Shout out Jeff.
Jeff.
Shout out Jeff.
Didn't want to forget that. This one's from Dylan Revel.
D-Revel.
D-Revel.
Would you rather be the richest man in the world or the smartest man in the world?
Neither one.
That's an interesting answer.
Cause yeah,
elaborate on that a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a lot of pressure to be either one.
It's a lot of pressure to be either
pressure
one.
From home, though.
Yeah, especially if you're smart, then you're just depressed the whole time.
Yeah.
I think they just
like, you know what I'm saying? If you're the smartest person, they're like looking at you to cure shit.
Do something.
Like,
do
damn,
something.
I just want to fucking watch Netflix, bro.
Yeah, it is a lot of responsibility.
Do this bullshit.
I think the biggest thing too though is that for me is like one thing I realized a long time ago that, you know, one of the smartest people that I know is my father, right? And in a big part, you know, of why I attribute that to him is because anytime I wanted to know something or I needed to learn something, he would say, you know, go pick up a book. And so when I was in high school, I was a library proctor for a semester at Topeka High, like back in...
Troy.
Exactly. I would have been a junior. And so I got to spend a semester in the library and, you know, I was really active and like taking like as many like African American leaning courses, so African American studies, African American history. But the best part about being in the library is that then I could go back, you know, and read all these great works. I could read Zora Neale Hurston, I could read Toni Morrison, I could read James Baldwin, Richard Wright. I could learn from, you know, all my forebears from, you know, the first, you know, the first half of the 20th century, you know, it's like I got an opportunity to use everything that happened from the late 1800s into the early 1960s as a roadmap for what I was seeing in the world. Because the reality is, you know, from some of those later writings, you know, from Langston Hughes or James Baldwin, not much has changed, you know, in the last 50 years. Mm-hmm. So I feel like for me it was such a blessing that advice that my father gave me to put me in a position where I could expose myself to something that was like really important to my history, but also really important for my future. Because so much of what I read about then, I see it in the world now. Like prophecy, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, like, that's unlimited. The potential for that type of knowledge and the potential for that kind of wisdom and intelligence, that can go on forever. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so much you can learn, you know, from now, you know, until the day that you die. And so I feel like that's the best advice I've ever been given, you know, and I credit my father for that in a big way. So that's why I say neither, because, like, the blessing of, you know, gaining knowledge and gaining intelligence is that it's a gift that just keeps on giving, just keeps on going, you know. You never be too smart.
I feel that, yeah. Well, damn. I don't even want to say my response. Cause
yeah, fuck money. I'm too dumb. Who cares?
I mean, it's just, well, you know, in the funny...
I was going to say riches. You know, give me the
little... you can get smart.
Yeah.
You can get smart.
You hire smart people.
That's exactly what rich people do. So yeah, you know, yeah. And it's funny. Like
they take money, the credit for it, pretty much.
Exactly. Yeah. Money is just a funny thing. You know, I also feel just like really blessed that, like, I'm reminded every single day because, you know, of the work that I do, working at United Way of Greater Topeka or some of the other ways that I serve in the community, I'm reminded of like the gift of wealth that I've been given. So whether that's through money or whether that's through a quality of life that I've achieved with my wife and with my daughter, or through the relationships we have with our neighbors, or my parents being married for almost 50 years now, you know, still being alive. You know, my grandmother turned 91 this year, back in April.
Oh, shout out.
Yeah.
Come on,
that's fire.
And it's just like... It's just like I'm just reminded so often of just the blessing of life.
Did you take popularity over money?
No, absolutely
like
not.
Like fame?
Yeah, popularity, fame, notoriety, that's worse than money.
Because what were you talking about? You said relationships with currency. Mm-hmm. What was that about?
Oh, just talking about...
Bringing it back, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
So like just your popularity, would you take that over just money, like the platform?
I don't think that would... really necessarily equates to...
Just kidding.
No, it's all good. No, I mean, that's worse because that'll go away faster than money. Cloud will just go away.
I was going to say, yeah, that's the thing. Like, if you want to, what do you say? Smart to be...
Smartest or the richest.
Yeah, because money, you can lose all your money, but if you're smart, unless you got CTE...
But the thing is, the richest, though, that's a lot of money.
Well,
and nobody said...
It dies.
I mean, he's popular, but it's like he's more infamous than anything. I mean, what does that say about his legacy? You know, Flavor Flav is like one of my favorite recording artists of all time. But, you know, and it's not really for me to judge, so I'm not saying that from a judgmental place, but it's like, so what does being on, you know, the Flavor of Love is what the show is called. Mm-hmm. You know, what does that do to like add to his legacy?
Yeah.
You know, what does that do to, you know, produce more of a foundation for his kids?
Brings a lot of memes.
Yeah, exactly. For his kids to be able to stand on, it's like, you can't pay bills with memes, yeah, you know, right. After your dad goes. You know, I think about that all the time. You know, I mean, it's a lot of, think about how many young artists that we've lost over the last few years, you know. And we've been talking about that with Nipsey Hussle, you know, when he passed, and Juice WRLD, and XXXTentacion, and Lil Peep, you know.
Mac Miller.
Yeah, Mac Miller, oh my God, you know, and you want to talk about somebody who put a lot of integrity into the music, put a lot of himself into the music, and that's going to continue to reverberate for a long time. For I'm not saying anything bad about these other artists, I'm just saying that's the difference, though, is that...
Timeless music.
Exactly, timeless music, yeah. And the things that people say about Mac, and his character, and the type of person that he was, so even at his lowest, like, people still have nothing but good things to say about who he was, you know?
Inspired to this day by Mac Miller. And To bring it back to that question, though, why I would save money is because there's a lot of things that I want to do, and even for people, that I can't even begin to think about doing without money. And if I was the richest person in the world, I think, to become the richest person in the world, you go through a whole bunch of shit. And I think, honestly, it takes one of the psychopath, sociopath, it takes one of those paths to become the richest person in the fucking world.
Yeah, it really does.
So if in this, like if I was just taken from this mind right now and I became the richest person in the world, I ain't never had money. So I'll do things like I had ideas. I see people walking around the street. I think there should be a car that drives around constantly picking people up for free. Yeah, like shit like that. Like, and without money, like you can't even begin to really think about that, those ideas. They just stick in your head, and you know what I mean? Absolutely. So
to blow the whole question up, can a smart man not be rich?
Can a smart man not be rich?
Right. You, I mean, you're asking,
like can, super intelligent?
You know what I mean? If you want to be the smartest or the richest, can a smart man not be rich?
Sometimes it's how intelligent.
If you chose smart, how would that not result into...
Because, like, say you don't want to take a deal because of pride or something.
Yeah, I think that's what comes a lot of times. Because when you're real smart, you are real aware of bullshit and evil and stuff like that. And it's almost consciously hard to do. Yeah, to really be making money out here, it's sometimes without, like, perfecting your art or perfecting whatever you do, it's grimy. And people get real fake and they turn.
Well, absolutely. And those are two different kind of smarts, right? Because, like, you know, there are people that are, you know, intelligent in terms of just like what they know about the world around them, but they might not have emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
They might not have self-awareness. You know, I know lots of smart people that are very aloof and don't really know how to handle themselves in situations, you know? And those people get taken advantage of by smarter people.
True, man.
Really easily, you know, and that happens all the time. You know, that's the world that we live in. I agree with you, though, and I'm glad that you put it that way, because that's something also that I spend a lot of time thinking about, especially working in nonprofit, because so much of what you have to do in nonprofit work is to apply for grants and develop channels for funding and fundraising and those types of things, you know. And I think about that all the time with relation to Central Topeka, East Topeka, you know, so many of us, you know, growing up here, coming up, no, you know, just seeing how it's changed over the years. It's like there's so many less things to do now for young people than there was before, you know. But young people are no less sharp and, you know, ambitious and engaged, you know, like we were, you know, when we were younger. It's like I see all of these great kids, you know, who have, like, you know, maxed out potential and just don't have anything to do with it, you know, and I hate that. And I think about that all the time. It's the same thing. Like, I would, one day, like, my dream would be to start a youth-centered nonprofit, you know, just providing job skills, providing creative opportunities, providing a platform. Like, I've seen this done all over the country. Like, you know, I played some of these spaces, and it's incredible. Just if you can figure out a way to, you know, get some money together and get people to fund it, you know, you can make some tremendous change happen.
You need to make Marty the richest man in the world, because then he would change the world.
I would do something with it.
Do you ever think about like politics? I know you mentioned something about not...
Sure. Yeah, no, I'm not particularly interested in running for office.
Nothing,
you know?
Like that.
And again, you know, it's not, I don't want to say it from a place of judgment, because I recognize the hard work that elected officials put into making these really difficult decisions. Like, I know that that's a part of it. And, you know, just working for the city, I saw that every day. You know, it's not easy to make tough decisions that affect thousands of people's lives, you know. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's just like, you know, even a space like this is a space I want to be able to communicate in freely.
Yeah.
And really say how I feel, and, you know, and be here with you all and be present, you know, like I'm not really interested in, like, being filtered.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, and I think that's the tough part too, is that
to interrupt you.
No.
That's the why of the Raw District, for real. It's because a lot of people that I'm interested in around the area and shit like that, I never get to get their perspective or their full perspective. Sometimes you get little interviews where, you know, at the beginning of our podcast where we kind of get to know you a little bit, it's that. And then after, and outside of that, you know, you don't get nothing else. And I really love the uncut, like, you watch YouTube videos, you watch motherfuckers like do cuts where they fucking sound, make themselves sound perfect, like they're putting perfect sentences together.
Yeah,
and shit
absolutely.
Like that.
Where it's all chopped up.
Yeah, one of my biggest pet peeves, and that's why I fell in love with podcasts, because it's such a dope place
you
to
see
just
the entire thought process.
Yeah, and no matter what you're saying, you can have idea. Like in the panel that I put together, it was like there was different perspectives, and I love that because you have sit there and have a conversation. Like we ruffled some feathers with the gay cartoon conversation.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
We did. And but
yeah,
yeah, it was good because we had different perspectives, and I had a trans actually that's friends with my girlfriend. I think you know.
Shout out Tony.
Yeah, yeah. He hit me up and he felt real passionate about it. She hit me up and it felt real passionate about it. And that shit is super important because no matter how you feel, like there was different perspectives and we just had a conversation. And some people can bring up points like Jacob had of his point. And then outside of that, you know, you don't get to hear him elaborate on it, and you don't get to hear him talk to somebody with a different perspective.
Absolutely.
And opening that up for any topic is what I like. I don't give a fuck about ads. I don't really give a fuck too much about that shit. Like at the core is just speaking your fucking mind, because it's too much fucking non-truth floating around this moment.
And we spend all spend a lot of time in our heads as creatives anyway.
Yeah,
like you spend a lot of time in your own head, and not always feeling like you can articulate that to just anybody, you know. And so it's always good to just be able to create space for people to express themselves, for sure. I agree.
And it's like Kanye West. A lot of I know a lot of people like Kanye West, who can't articulate their points perfectly in the moment, how they want to do it and whatnot.
Absolutely.
And they get little clips of.
What you about to say about Kanye?
Say it.
Nah, he was getting ready to defend his homie. He was waiting.
Yeah. No. It's
That's
like
true.
It's like a lot of people see the headlines about Kanye West and they don't even care to hear his elaboration on shit like that. And
Absolutely.
That happens so much in this industry. And yeah, that's the why of this. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No. I'm glad that you did, because I don't know how well y'all remember Lowercase Kansas, but it was like when we do bars up, like when we do the ciphers, it was the exact same thing. You know, from 2013 to 2015, the whole premise was we're providing a platform for young people who may have never even gone to a music venue, to be in here, to have equal footing, get on the mic, say what they got to say. I mean, I remember like one battle. Between, it was, Anthony Mendez and Michael Hanley Jr. Hopefully they'll watch this, but...
Yeah, tune in.
Yeah, I'll tag them in it, just
and
so
subscribe.
I can tell... Just so I can tell
subscribe!
The, just so I can tell the story, but I remember at one point they were battling, just in the middle of a cipher at one night, and Anthony used some words that he shouldn't have used, and everybody agreed on that. But people got hype, and then Micah stood his ground. He stood up and said, no, like, you're not going to say that to me. You can't say words like that to me. But they just did it in a rap. Like, they just rapped that exchange back and forth.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, that's Anthony right. apologized to him in a rap.
Oh.
like, it was crazy.
Oh, that's dope.
Like, at first, Micah was ready to box, but then, like, he just stepped back and let him finish his rap. Then he came back with another verse, and the thing was... You know, of course that's messy. Of course that's imperfect.
It's hip hop.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's very much hip hop, you know, and it just
and we're all imperfect.
And it creates opportunities for people to actually see, you know, like this is who I really am. This is who I really am. Well, let's figure this out, you know.
You can learn in five minutes like that, you know? It's like, oh shit. Like, especially when you're in the moment, you feel it. It's like, oh, fuck.
Like, that's exactly it. It's like you're more present. Like they were immediately more present just because of how heightened the tension got in that moment, like real fast.
That's
you
the
know?
Realest shit can get.
Exactly. And just the fact that we were able to provide that space and do it in a somewhat safe manner too was really powerful. I'm not saying that that's always the best way to do things, but it certainly was good at that point in time. So.
Yeah, for sure. That's just crazy, man.
Yeah, it's wild.
Yeah, in conversation, man, I've mentioned this before. Just a lot gets lost on the internet, like just energy-wise. You just don't feel a lot of things. Like he was mentioning Coach Denny watches the podcast, bro. I would never, or even tunes into anything, bro.
Hey,
I would never
expect it. You better share that shit, Denny.
I would never expect it, you know what I mean?
Coach Denny,
you better subscribe, Denny.
Yeah, subscribe, Denny. Show me.
Big pack.
bring the 30 pack.
Drop a comment. I like it.
Shout out.
Yeah. Let's get into... couple headlines. I want to do a local headline.
Oh, no. Let's do it.
Talking about you today.
Who?
I'm just Denny.
Oh, what?
He said you was on there now. You
oh, yeah.
Speak high.
Oh, so
he's plugged in. Yeah, yeah. I love you, Danny.
I thought he was talking about the controversy, the gay kind of the fighters.
Oh.
Like, oh, yeah, he's a fighter now. I even told him he was a fighter. He was like, really? He's a fighter?
Oh,
like,
you talking about Jacob?
He thought you were Jacob.
Yeah, oh. I thought when he said, you know, because Tony Montana's the last time I seen him.
Yeah, yeah.
That's just fine, though.
Shout out Tony, man. You know, he said, shit, yeah.
Oh, yeah, shout out Tony, man. We got
to call him for some really good relationship advice.
I asked him if he had Signal, and he's not responding.
He's responding. He must not have Signal right now. When I said I was here, I'll be right there.
That's too funny.
I was going to call him, ask him for relationship advice, but fuck it.
Here we go, headlines.
Headlines. We'll start off with the local one first. Okay. And I'm bad with names, remember that. But Tamiko Mitchell?
Yes. Yeah, Miss Mitchell. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about it. You want to explain it? You have it.
Yeah. So just for the audience, yeah, just what I understand to be true is that this was an incident that had occurred between Miss Mitchell and a sergeant on with the local police department 2 days before the special meeting on police reform happened on August 25th. So presumably this would have happened Sunday, August 23rd, and she alleges that. That after she was pulled over, stopped, and attempted to cooperate with the officer in question, that he had pulled her out of the vehicle and thrown her face first into the grass, resulting in, like, injuries, like, all on her face and stuff. And so for anybody who doesn't know, like, the article is out there, photographs of her injuries are out there as well.
She also did an interview with the news last night.
Oh, did she really? Yeah, I didn't see that.
She had a sit-down, and you can see the damage on her eye. And you can tell she's
busted eye socket. And
you can tell that you can see the trauma in her face from the shit, man. It's
right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so for me, specifically as it relates to police reform, I find it, I wouldn't even say coincidental, just tragic that here's a moment where, this the city of Topeka on the whole, you know, not just city government, but on the whole. A lot of us have been pushing for accountability and transparency within our police department for a very long time, you know, especially in the wake of Dominique's passing back in 2017. And so for me, to have that special meeting happen and to have so many, you know, Back the Blue supporters show up in protest, you know, of that special meeting, for one, that tells us a lot about where we are as a community on this conversation. Mm-hmm. Number two, what happened to Miss Mitchell also tells us a lot about where we're at as a community.
Especially
on this conversation.
As a police officer, you know that you're probably going to have the meeting about the police reform 2 days after that, right?
Right.
Like you should be tapped in as a cop to know what your whole squad's doing.
You should be.
Yeah.
You know?
You should be.
Yeah.
And that's really what the problem is that, you know, I mean, I've spent a lot of time in this work, and Chris knows that alongside his family, and with some other people that I've organized with in the past, you know, the last thing I want to do is disrupt, you know, any of the positive work that's happened in the last 3 years since Dominique passed. But I've never been one to shy away, whether it's with Chief Cochran or Captain Cross or Lieutenant Roth or. You know, any of their community policing counterparts, like I've never been one to shy away from telling the truth. You know, if I'm showing up, the only capacity that I'm showing up in this space is if we can have an honest conversation.
Right.
That's the only reason why I'm here, because I'm talking about 20 years, you know, from when Ashley Page was murdered by a cop, 2001, all the way to when Dominique passed away. You know, I'm talking about years. You know, I'm talking about the Lamas brothers in 2006 when they got shot by off-duty police officers. I'm talking about, and I don't care that the camera's on, but I'm talking about when Cruz got a manslaughter charge for killing somebody with his vehicle and got his job back. Yeah. This is what we're talking about. We're not making this up. People are living this. People are living through this. And if we can't have an honest conversation about that, then what are we doing? And for me, it's like both of those things are symbolic of the fact that we might not be having as honest a conversation as people want to make it seem like we are. Mm-hmm. If that could happen to Miss Mitchell 2 days before, and then all these people show up talking about if the cops go away, you know, what's going to happen to our city? You know, I'm afraid. I'm afraid of the possibilities. And it's like, think about how we feel. Think about how Miss Mitchell feels 2 days before, right? Yeah.
And the thing, it's not going to make a national... It's not going to be a national news story because it's just police brutality and nobody's getting killed, nobody's getting shot. There's no video attached to it. And it's so, like, it's an eye-opener. It should be an eye-opener to people that this stuff happens all the time behind the scenes. And that is, like, yeah, sure, people, like, every once in a while there's somebody killed by the police. But this other stuff, like, I was pulled over just 2 days ago, followed by a cop, like, I'm talking intersection right here, the cop's right here. I drive past, he just follows me and then pulls me over. I pull into the parking lot and he walks up to the car and he's like, oh, my bad. The tags when I first ran them, and remember, he fucking, I don't know, there was no, right. there was, yeah, there, he didn't run the tags.
He would have had no time before he pulled you over to run the tags.
Yeah, he's like, the tags came up as a stolen vehicle as he was walking to my car. Yeah, and it, like, because I had the ID, I put the ID out of the car. Hands, and I feel like he just realized that he wasn't going to get nothing out of me. There was nothing there. Right. He was like, oh, yeah. Like, shit like that happens all the time.
Absolutely. I can't tell you how many times I got pulled over between Shawnee and Douglas County when I was y'all's age, honestly. Like, I remember driving from 21st and Gage, proceeding north on Gage. I walked outside of a house party off of like 21st and Mission because there's like two fourplexes like on that street, and so my buddy stayed in one. I had walked out of his apartment. Cops on the ground everywhere, right? Got a helicopter in the sky. Cops on the ground are clearly looking for somebody very specific. My girlfriend at the time and I, we leave the party. All of our friends, like, way drunk, took their shirts off. Getting the helicopter's attention, you know, that's whatever. So we're just like, okay, we're going to go home. So then I noticed the beam hitting our car. So then I slow down to like 25 and then 20. And then we get just past 17th and Gage. Then these cops that we just walked by, that we waved at before I got in my car, chased us down to tell me that I was not the person they were looking for. And I was like, I just saw you, though. We just saw each other. I just acknowledged you.
There's fucking shit like that, bro.
You know, to try to keep myself safe, you know?
Yeah.
Wow. And that, you know, and I could tell you that story 10 more times. Ten different versions of that same story.
That reminds me of something, though. You said you waved at them. You know where waving came from?
Mm-mm.
It's actually in, like... Over, like, you know how people, old people used to just, like, wave at people in the neighborhood when they drove past.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I guess it started from, like, showing your hands. That you're not, like, you mean you come in peace type shit. So when people would come through your neighborhood or whatever, you would just be like...
Oh, yeah, it's fine.
And, like, it evolved into just a fucking wave
type shit. That makes so much sense because that's why I do it, you know, because, like, it used to be situations I would step into.
I'm not threatening.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And just because of my size, my stature, my skin color.
And that even evolved to, like, the head nod. You know what I'm saying? You see people, you give them a head nod. You're like, hey, what's good, man? Like, I ain't one of them.
Exactly. Exactly.
I ain't an op.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's talk a little NBA before we get out of here. I know Chris has some feelings about...
Giannis.
Bucks.
Look at Tobias turn around. He's like, I want to talk NBA.
I don't really follow NBA that much.
Oh.
Nah, I guess.
Yeah,
even worse.
Yeah.
Got you.
Where we at right now? What you thinking? What you thinking for the matchup in the finals?
Man, I want to see what these Clippers is looking like tonight against the Nuggets, and that'll tell me a lot. But right now,
they gonna wash
Lakers and the Clippers is top in the West.
It's crazy.
Yeah, and right now, in the East, it's looking like it's gonna be an Eastern Conference Finals with Miami and Boston for real.
You think they'll get back past the Bucks?
Oh yeah, man. Miami's looking like they handling that series right now.
They did.
They look very confident. They looking like the game plan that's supposed to be put together, like. They going out there executing, and they feeling real confident with what they doing. So.
And yeah. I felt like they tried to give it to the Bucks at the end of the game, too. Like, Miami won by a lot more. Wait, if like, they were up by a bunch before. I don't know what it was, like, the last 3 minutes or something like that.
Yeah, they've been up the last two games, like, about 10, you know, good 10 points, 8 points, something like that.
That's a good sign, for real.
Yeah, yeah. I just love how competitive it's been, man. It's been exciting. I don't know if it's because of the long pause.
Yeah.
I wasn't here for a
while. Yeah, because people are healthy.
I feel like a little kid again. I'm just like, man.
Hungry as hell.
I like hearing the shit.
Have been exciting.
I like hearing the shit talking.
Yeah, there's been a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of that.
Because of no crowds.
Yeah, for sure.
Like that Utah and the Jazz series, or the Utah and the Nuggets series, that could have gone on 10 games.
They're hitting the gym to cancel sports.
They try to wash it out, huh?
It's true.
Maybe.
In differences, you know what I mean? Like, we can't touch our players to, you know. Like, sports is a whole different community. Like,
yes.
Like, sports. Like, y'all don't play sports with all different aspects.
Luca. Think about people like Luca.
Like, Dirk.
You know what
we be seeing color, though, in basketball, for sure.
I mean, white boys had that.
Were you picking up the teams?
I saw that. That was funny, too. I'm sorry.
Hey, was like, I don't give a fuck. Like, that doesn't bother me.
It's like,
I am white.
Like, he's like, in the moment.
Yeah, we see.
You see the color, bro?
He's like, I've heard that before.
What you think about Richard Jefferson calling Giannis a Pippen?
He called him that.
You didn't see that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, he tweeted today.
Why would he do that?
He said Giannis might be a Pippen. There, I said it.
To who?
He said he may need a Jordan. He's saying where he's at in his career and how he elaborated on that was he was saying like he was just using the Pippen term as like a not saying that like Pippen wasn't great or Giannis ain't great.
He's just saying right now
he's not able to take over games like a Kobe. Like a George.
Interesting.
Like how old is Giannis?
How old is he? He's still young. And he did give him credit on that. He was like, he's young and he can still develop that. But I think right now he needs somebody else that can go late game and get a bucket. And he also threw your boy, the Cavs team in there. He was like Kyrie did for LeBron. Mm. So he kind of threw LeBron in there and then LeBron shot back at him.
Who would that be though?
He's only 25.
Damn.
I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a good question.
That's what I'm saying. How can you say that about the MVP? In the MVP.
Yeah, I was gonna say, didn't he win
MVP? There ain't no better player right now.
So he needs a clutch. Who were you?
Like I said, this is what Richard Jefferson was saying. He was like, he can still be the Jordan on the team, the best player, the MVP of the team.
Absolutely.
He's like, but he needs that go getter. And like I said, he used the example of Kyrie, how Kyrie hit the big shot.
Yeah.
LeBron was the big stat, got him there, did all that. But when it came down to closing the game,
right.
Yeah, Ray Allen had big shots.
Well, I feel like that'll make sense though.
Listen to this. So Jay Will jumps in on Twitter and he you make sense. And then elaborates more on how with the example with LeBron.
Yeah.
LeBron said, I don't know how I'm even a part of this. I'm minding my business. This and that. I'm getting ready for Houston. He was like, I've only been one person, and that's me. King shit.
Exactly. Good for him.
He needs a Ray Allen or a good point guard.
That's kind of what the other analysts were saying.
Calling him Pippen needs
a greater player.
Yeah.
But they were saying like he needs somebody who can maybe just make it easier for him.
Because the options are slim.
Which I agree with. I mean, he's a freak. He's a different type of player, but
you can't do everything.
He's not a one-on-one.
What about
he's
his
not
brother?
A one-on-one offense.
I forgot his older brother plays for the Bucks too. What about him?
I think they have a couple of them.
They got two. He's got two. One for the Lakers and one for the. But they ain't. They're not. They don't seem like they're as, hungry for the.
Sure.
They didn't
sure.
get the gene.
The one that's on the Bucks, like I mean, he seems like he's perfectly content over there. No disrespect to him at all, but he's the biggest.
Yeah,
he's the one over there.
He probably
doing
sing
the most, which I love to see that. That's cool to see. And I'm pretty sure that's his older brother.
That is his older brother.
So that's really cool to see that. Showing all that love.
What was the last trio of brothers that got in the league like a few years ago?
They're still in there now. The Holidays, Drew Holiday, Aaron Holiday.
See, I'm not thinking about the holidays. I'm thinking about because their dad developed that apparel brand for them. Oh. Big Baller.
Oh, yeah. They didn't all make it.
They got one.
Yeah.
They're gonna have two. So they're gonna have two.
But the middle one faded out.
The middle one out here.
he stole some product from UCLA.
No, yeah. He stole from China.
Because he almost got locked up.
He was going to UCLA, and
they tried to lock his ass up.
Right, yes,
right. Imagine
what a dummy.
Yeah, no, that's so stupid. God.
That's just immaturity, though. I hope he's matured since then. You know, everybody progresses.
Absolutely. Hey, yeah. No disrespect to you, young man.
Everybody grows.
Name I can't remember. Your brother is better than you at basketball. I don't know.
We got Lonzo LaMelo.
Thank you. The balls. Hey, yeah.
You see what was the other one's name? A year though today, right?
What?
See that?
Lajello?
Lil Jello?
That's the middle one.
LiAngelo?
Your boy won it, man. John Morant.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I knew that was coming.
But yeah, I remember that.
Damn, they don't. Look, that's disrespectful.
Their dad was talking big shit.
The brothers, they only listen to
him. He still is with the little.
Oh, no, there he is. LiAngelo.
Developing him for.
But where's the other one?
Yeah, there's no LaMelo. Oh, LaMelo Ball.
You gotta be though. See, and the thing is like it's the same thing that people say about Kanye. So it's just like, you know, like he might not have enough finesse or articulation to get his point across every single time he opens his mouth, right? But I think about if I had three talented sons, you know, my nephew actually, like, he plays ball in like Central Illinois, and he's been. Like, he's only 16, and he's looking at all these schools, like, getting full-ride scholarships, you know. So, like, I understand. Oh, no. It's like, if you have somebody with that level of talent, you know, in your life that you can nurture and grow and help facilitate them becoming a better player and being, like, the best player they can be, competing at that level, you know, maybe I would just be exactly like their dad, too, you know, just, like, all on the cameras, right. like, no press. Like you want to talk to my kids, you got to talk to me, you know.
Straight to me.
Yeah.
That is kind of how it was played out. Yep. You heard way more from him than like any of the kids.
Yeah, and it's and if it's me, then, you know, like, that, maybe I would do that. Maybe that would be
right.
Me.
You never know. he got them popular
like
as
that,
hell,
he may be a genius.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, he was marketing the shit out of that.
Oh, yeah, he did, but that brand was horrible.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Bigger, baller brand. Like, we got used to.
Should have got some good designers, man.
That and like, we got used to the name, but that shit was corny as hell, bro.
That's all it takes. Man.
Big baller brand.
Big baller.
Big baller brand.
That's when the client makes the decision.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't tell them this is stupid.
Right. Right.
Exactly.
He just gets paid and does his work.
It's like a tattoo.
BBB.
BBB.
God, that was horrible. Also, the other headline, Chadwick Boseman passed away.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, that shit was heavy, man, and out of nowhere. But it brings a good conversation up to the table about how he kept his personal life out of the spotlight. And it was real respectable, and that's, I don't know, it's been like on my mind since it's happened, man.
Absolutely.
And I don't strong even know person. If he like kept. I don't even know, like, because he filmed the Avengers in Stage 3, and I don't even know if he told any of, like, you know, his,
that's what's crazy. Yeah,
other people and shit.
Right.
Yeah, there was somebody they were interviewing, and I don't know exactly what she was to him, but she worked pretty closely with, you know, with him on set and stuff like that. And she was saying like that. She didn't know.
She didn't even know. Yeah.
He sent a long page email to his family about like health and shit like that, and like offered to like pay for it.
Yeah, I saw that. What was that?
Wow.
I think that was on First Take or something like that. Didn't somebody on? I think I did see something about that.
I don't know where I seen that, but yeah, like he was like real dedicated to it. Like you said, like it touched me in that way too. Like,
yeah.
How you can just, you know, just go about your business and know that that's there.
And not put it on nobody else, you know what I mean? Instead of, like, putting that energy and that pain off on everybody else, he gave us
it was
art, straight, beautiful art.
Right.
Kenny Smith on NBA, on whatever, TNT, because he emailed it to him, too. Mm-hmm. He was real close friends with Chadwick, and he said, because at least that's where I heard about that. But, yeah, it was some long health, like, you know, thing, and he wanted to, he was like, hey, do this for your family. He was telling Kenny to do it for his family, you know. I'm gonna, you know, pay for whoever's willing to do it, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, he was really, but like you said, with him just keeping it you know, in the back and still being dedicated to his work, that just goes along.
So he
you know,
didn't want any sympathy or anything. Speaks volumes
about the, you know, his character to me.
Yeah, mm-hmm. For real. How you feel about it, man?
Absolutely.
Because I know you changed your, you have to feel a certain way.
Yeah, you know, and a lot of times, you know, I, you know, do that out of, you know, just, you know, just to honor.
Yeah.
Honor people that, you know, who've affected a lot of people's lives, you know. And it's funny because, like, I used to be really big into movies. Like, I used to be, like, a crazy movie buff, and especially, like, superhero movies. But, like, I sat my wife down to watch, like, X-Men, like when they have, like, two or three movies out back-to-back, and, like, Lord of the Rings, and she's like, don't ever do that again. That was, like, 2007. Like, you know, I'm just like, no, this will be a great night. You know, 9 hours of, like, Lord of the Rings.
Oh, yeah.
She wasn't feeling it, but I think...
You see, that got canceled quick.
Yeah, yeah.
She said, count Harry Potter.
Something else. Anything else.
Well, she's your wife. She's still with you.
Yeah, exactly. No, she also challenges me in really positive ways. But as far as Chadwick Boseman, I mean, I think the big thing, too, for me is that, you know, when I finally did get to sit down and watch Black Panther, you know, and recognize all, you know, all the cultural influence that it had, but then also like his presence in the movie, the role that he played, and just what I just a little bit that I know of his character outside of his work, you know, I think it felt fitting to make that change. And then also like just recognizing, like, you know, because in the days since, you see all these, you know, very young children who have all their figurines sitting out, you know, they got Black Panther down, and you know and just seeing that got me really emotional, because I know that when I was young, I had all of these icons and these figures from television that I looked up to, that I revered, that inspired me. Mm-hmm. And knowing that him playing that role specifically not only influenced, like, you know, people our age, but also, like, you know, this generation that's going to follow us, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Like, it's just, yeah, you can't help but honor that, you know, recognize that, you know, anybody who has that level of influence, you know, positively on really young people is, it's just really powerful.
Not only was he Black Panther, he's like one of the dopest superheroes ever.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. Easy.
Fucking ill.
Easy. Yeah, just the way he was moving, just everything that was happening.
So
just
dope.
Yeah, you know. And
he was rich, like...
Mm.
Yeah, big
up. Like, his own community.
Speaking of being rich and smart.
Right. And that's what, you know, that's what the world needs, is a T'Challa.
Yeah, on a happier tip. Oh, that's going to be
Yuri. I think in the comic book, Yuri took over because he gave the throne to her or something.
Mm.
So she might be the new Black Panther.
What's your favorite movie from
him? That's his sister,
from him?
Right?
Yeah.
I like 42.
42, Jackie Robinson.
Yeah, I've seen that really one. I ain't seen it. I need to go back and watch that again.
Yeah, I want to watch that again, too, really just because it's been a long time since I've seen it. Yeah.
It was one I've seen.
But I was going to say, like...
He's dope in the other Marvel movies, too.
Another big hero of that movie, too, though, was director Ryan Coogler, which... Because he directed that movie, didn't he? Okay, yeah. Just, like, his level of expertise and just the idea that, you know, a Black filmmaker, a Black director... Not to say that they could do it, but it's just the fact that, like, he was given, you know what I'm saying? Because I knew how that was going to come out, but that's not what I meant. That's not what I meant. Right. Just the fact that he was presented with an opportunity, actually given a platform to realize, like, this fully immersed, like, Black,
so
African
big.
Referencing world was just so powerful.
It's larger than life.
It's so needed. You know, people need to know, because that's really how Africa is, though. And more, you know, and that's something that, especially like here in the West or this part of the Western world, that we don't get enough education on, is like just the width and breadth of the African experience.
That's true,
you know?
Man. Like all their natural resources and shit, like all the other stuff that nobody else had, and
exactly.
In their dome and stuff, it's like nobody can get in here.
Right, and that's it. I mean, in terms of like being, you know, a resource-rich continent, and talking about cultures. Languages, dialects, you know, it's countries where, you know, they might have one primary language but have like 20 different ways of speaking it, you know.
And even their beef within each other.
Yeah, like, absolutely, yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. And they came together at the end.
So,
yeah, my shit was the James Brown one.
Absolutely.
It's dope. The Jackie Robinson, I didn't finish that one yet, and I haven't seen Black Panther.
The final
You haven't seen it?
No, I'm not a super. Yeah, I hate superhero movies. Yeah. I hate them.
Yeah. Really?
Why?
I don't know. Like, the last superhero movie I liked was Spider-Man with the original one. Not original, Tony original.
McGuire?
Yeah, where he was, yeah.
That's so that
was
funny. The last one. Yeah,
that was the last one. I was like, those are the superhero movies yeah. you like, bro?
When he had that line where he was.
They've come a really long way since
they
then.
They have. Yeah.
They have. And I tried to watch them, and it's just like, I like realistic shit, man. That's just my shit. I like
realistic shit. It's different. Yeah, yeah, they're definitely made differently now. Which isn't a bad thing. I just think it's cool too, like, especially, like, again, you know, when you talk about a younger generation, it's like these are all the movies that they will grow up mm-hmm. and look back on and be like, this is all tied into my childhood. And then when movies change again, you know, and all the kids who come after them or their children or their children's children, you know, it's just like it just comes and goes in waves. Like, that's the power of film, that's the power of mm-hmm. cinema, yeah. and, you know, good actors and actresses really bring that shit to life. So,
oh, yeah. R.I.P., man.
He's one of them.
Legend.
Absolutely.
Great dude.
Let's go ahead and get into shout-outs, man, and slide up out of here. Who wants to kick it off? Shout-out to Water. That's what I'm going to...
Absolutely. Water.
Shout-out Water.
Yep.
Shout-out Tobo, season one.
Yep.
I have a shout-out real quick back to your therapy thing.
Yeah.
There's a service in Kansas City called Sesame that will allow you to have a consultation with a professional therapist for $40 if you don't have insurance.
That's amazing.
Nice.
For people who don't have insurance,
Sesame.
A service called Sesame mm-hmm. Healthcare. And there's lots of different things that they provide. It's not just therapy, but therapy is...
Yeah.
Bad. I thought the logo
also, BetterHelp. BetterHelp.com. You can do it if you don't feel like going in yeah. person. You can do it online. You know,
yeah,
they
yeah.
match you up.
Wow. Shout out to that.
Come on,
shout out to therapy and mental health. Absolutely.
Yeah, shout you out know. Therapy. Come on the show, man.
Therapize us all.
For real. Yeah, let us get a free session. Man. Give us some of that.
Shit, I'm gonna just shout out FOS, shout out Red Room Live.
Easy, yeah.
I'm trying to get my shirts out. Just drop some shirts, buy them, please.
Support, subscribe.
Flip them blouses.
They're champions. Mm-hmm. Shout out Raw District.
Yeah, yeah.
Looking forward to season two. Shout out Marty the OG. Shout out Couch Guest. Shout out Tobo and shout out Life.
Yeah, shout out Trucker Tone. Out there on the road getting that money, man.
Montana,
Trucker Tone, man.
Mm-hmm. Come back in one
yeah,
piece.
Respectfully,
man. Be safe
respectfully.
Out
there, bro. Shit, I want to shout out. I've been meaning to do it all season, my homie Raymond Solis, man. Shout out to Raymond, yeah. RIP.
Mm-hmm. Big player Ray.
Hell mm-hmm. yeah. Outside of that, shout out to you for coming through, man.
Shout out to Raw District, you know, for always putting the culture first, you know, even before the podcast. I mean, that's something that we have to recognize, right? We have to champion that. You know, it's a lot of us out here that, you know, care about one another, care about this as a community, care about this culture, and it shows in the music that we create and the art that we express, you know, and I'm so grateful to you know, at the age of 37, to still be a part of it in some small way, you know, yeah. that really means a lot
way.
To me.
Shout out to the culture, man.
Absolutely.
Shout out to 785, man. All
shout
the creators.
Shout out my daughter Eloise.
Mm. Shout out. Yeah. You got some?
You know, yeah, shout out the Raw District Podcast. Shout out Marty for coming on. Mm-hmm. Also, shout out, man, to always being an advocate for the community and especially, you know, personally for my family.
Absolutely.
And always standing by us through, you know, our tough times.
It's always been an honor.
Shout out Neek, man. Rest in peace, cuz. Miss you. Shout out all the other, you know, victims to police brutality and whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Couch Guess.
There you go.
Shout-outs. No shout-outs.
Fuck us, right?
Shout yeah.
More life.
Shout-out to the district.
Hey, tell them to subscribe, bro.
Yeah,
oh
subscribe,
yeah,
subscribe, man. That's your one job. Over there.
You dropped the ball in the subscribe.
Yeah, we forgot to tell you. You got to pass the torch,
bro.
Man. You got to let him
know.
Yeah,
yeah. He should.
That's
he
a wrap for this episode,
watching.
Man. Y'all be easy.
Hey, whatever.
Yeah, stay safe out there.
Peace.
Yeah.
I'm about to piss myself.
Me too.
Hey, one at a time. Man, thank you so much for having me on, man.
Yeah,
I appreciate
yeah,
that. Absolutely.
Thank you.
It was a blessing, honestly. It's always good to have these conversations just to catch up, too.
Absolutely.
I'm not gonna piss so bad.
Yeah.